Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, over the last few years, the world of esports has exploded in popularity, often with professional players earning significant winnings. By 2024, global audiences on platforms like YouTube and Twitch is expected to reach nearly 600 million people, compared to roughly 400 million in 2019. And for any cynics listening who wonder how computer gaming can be a sport, let's not forget that Formula 1 motor racing is all about sitting down whilst the car does all the hard work. Rifle shooting involves lying down whilst a bullet does all the hard work. And darts, well, at least in darts, there's no machine involved other than the human body. But they all involve specific skills that can be both nurtured and supported in lots of different ways. Now, in esports, there's money to be made. Gaming is becoming a serious sport, but there remains a significant gap in the research around the role of nutrition on performance. For conventional sports, research often focuses on nutrition as a way to enhance physical ability. What can make you run faster, jump higher, and maintain stamina? But considering that esport athletes spend the majority of their careers sitting down, you'd expect their nutritional needs to differ. So, what is the role of nutrition in this field? How can it be used to optimize a gamer's performance? And where is the research heading? Well, with me to discuss this are two absolutely fantastic guests. Claudia Buschek is CEO and sports nutritionist at Made by Diet Nutrition Clinic. Hello there, Claudia.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Great to have you with us. We've also got Nicholas Morgan, who's founder and managing director at Nutrition Integrated. Hello there, Nicholas.
Hi there, everyone.
Great to have you as well. Now, let's start with you. I'm sure most people will be familiar with gaming, but how would we define an e-sport?
Gaming, by definition, of course, has some form of performance outcome. I think e-sports is adding some layer of true competitive structure to it. And ultimately, whether that's as an individual or as part of a team, you are competing competitively for a prize to some extent versus others. And I think that's the key thing, really. I think there's a lot of people gaming and they're doing that socially for cultural stimulation and so on amongst so many peer groups. And that's really interesting. But esports is when it gets really serious. I think there's more of a prize fund at the end of it. Mm-hmm. Notoriety, of course, whether that's locally or globally. And I think that adds the definition element of it. But I think in the broadest element to it, I think esports is the pinnacle of the competitive area. And, yeah, it definitely opens people's eyes to a new area that nutrition could be relevant to.
Yeah, and it's a professional area as well. There is money to be made here. Now, look, I'm not a gamer. I'm very glad I'm not a gamer because my addictive sort of personality would mean that I would literally lose most of my life to doing it. So, but that's great because I can stand back from it. And you can tell me all about it. Big question really is, why is nutrition important for a sport that doesn't require very much movement?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes down to the fact that performance is defined both mentally and physically. Actually, whether there's a physical component to football, tennis or whatever, there is a huge mental component to that as well. And actually what you're doing is you're isolating the mental performance of an individual versus another individual within an environment that happens to be virtual. I think I tend to refer to it as a virtual world of performance. And if it's virtual and you're competing sitting down, the reality is reaction time, decision making, the ability to process information, make rapid decisions and so on are all parts of the performance matrix, let's say. That truly exists in all forms of performance. It's just that in this instance, the assumption is there is no physical demand that would separate one person from another. They might twitch a lot. They might move around a lot. I mean, who knows what people do when they're in their bedrooms or whatever. But needless to say, I think the key thing here is there's a cognitive performance demand, and that's where nutrition can have a big role to play.
Yeah. And Claudia, I mean, there are lots of cynics around. We don't really care about them in this arena because we're talking about things you're already doing. But there are lots of cynics around who say, there's people sitting in front of a computer. But then those same people will be spending hours in front of a computer. They'll be worried about their concentration, their alertness, the impact that staring at a computer has on their ability to work and function as best they can. So there are hugely important issues around here, aren't there?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not that much research in the field of esport nutrition. Of course, there are some research that relate to sport, supplements, dietary supplements or functional beverages that may potentially boost cognitive performance. However, there's not that much research related to nutrition and food that may contribute to cognitive performance. So it's really hard to talk about some nutrition recommendations that are based on scientific evidence.
Okay. Now, in general, from a sort of casual observance of people gaming, is it just people drinking crap loads of caffeine?
Yeah, I think that gamers probably consume lots of caffeine because caffeine is one of the ergogenic supplement that may influence cognitive performance, increase alertness, and help the athletes to perform better. So this group of people definitely drinks lots of caffeine.
And is this wise?
Caffeine supplementation will provide some benefits for e-players, but too much caffeine will also increase anxiety and will have negative effect on their performance. So I think that a little amount of caffeine will be beneficial, but too much caffeine may have a negative impact on performance.
Yeah.
Just to add in, if it's okay, one of the things I spend a lot of time doing is tracking, I guess, the commercial application. So the brands, the products, what they have. And to your point, Stefan, the number one product that exists just by frequency of availability and I guess what drives revenue to selling to people is ultimately the energy powder. So that's a powder that would be like, you could define it as a pre-workout redefined from the world of sports nutrition. They exist with some slight differences, but ultimately caffeine is probably the number one ingredient that is used. In fact, it's not probably, it is. So it's the number one product, and caffeine is the number one ingredient used, typically less than a normal sporting equivalent in terms of sporting equivalent product. So I think that's the thing. That is what people are using at the moment in terms of what's available and what esports people typically move towards.
Yeah. And is that a sort of reductionist issue? You know, is everything resolving itself in caffeine at the moment and missing other important nutritional elements?
I guess there's two things to this. Truly in the performance world, I think with all the support that's gone into it, and there's a lot of money involved, a lot of practitioners involved, I think the supply of nutritional education and let's say products is maturing and has got some good people around it to framework what would be done. So there's lots of things going into eating better, eye health, you know, not just stimulation and so on. So there's a breadth of support going in, which I would genuinely say is reasonably credible with, as long as there's, you know, practitioners involved like Claudia.
Yeah.
Once you go beyond an esports, like at the elitist of the elite, where there's no provision of service, then of course you're back to what do people find on the internet and so on, which will be caffeine-driven energy-based powders, although there are some non-stimulant versions. And then you're getting into a broader ethical discussion of, you know, can we control what they're using, when, how often, do they know how to use it and so on. And then that becomes a different type of question. And that comes back to your first one, which is like, what is the definition of esports and what's the broader generational implication of there's just a lot of younger generation people gaming?
Mm. And also there's a different sort of socio-demographic, isn't there? It's sort of, you know, there's the latest stats that I've seen, and it may be very different now, is that I think 85% of gamers are male, 15 female. Claudia, is that still the case, or are there more updated statistics on this?
I'm not sure exactly what are the numbers, but yes, I have heard that there's much more males within the esport than female. But I think the number of female players will definitely increase in the matter of time.
And the fact that you've got more women than men and that these tend to be younger people doing it, does that mean that the nutritional profile of different products needs to be different to satisfy specific needs?
Well, I think that the gamer nutrition definitely should differ from the conventional traditional diet, especially compare players to traditional athletes, right? So I think these their needs differ, because esport is much more mentally tiring than physically, right, demanding. So the cognitive functions are really important in esport. So, for example, compare e-athletes to traditional athletes. There are a few differences. For example, traditional athletes consume lots of carbohydrate during their activities like competition and trainings. But on the other hand, e-players, I mean, it's convenient to, for example, grab a high-carb bar or have an energy drink or isotonic drink during the competition or prolonged trainings, but it's not so good for e-players because it may lead to unstable glucose level, which may relate it to being tired, both physically and mentally. And also it may result in poor performance and diabetes or obesity in later years.
So, Nick, I mean, what you mentioned a couple of other aspects of lifestyle that can enhance or detract from an esports performance. What else is there that needs to happen? I mean, you know, Claudia just mentioned obesity. Is this an issue with a relatively sedentary sport? Are there lifestyle factors that can help?
I don't think we know the level of obesity of those that game versus non-game, but in the grand scheme of things, I think generationally we would worry about the amount of physical activity of a younger generation. So in general, anything that drives people to be less active than not from a health and an obesity point of view is just something for everyone to really think through, to be honest. I think it will be labelled at gaming or as a gaming culture, unquestionably, but I think it's a broader thing regarding just getting more people active anyway, in simple terms. When it comes to actually the performance of gaming or in esports, so within any competition, whether it's more of a like your FIFA versus Call of Duty or something, then the reality is everything from a nutritional level is going to have some form of downstream impact. Mm. So the better you eat, the more fresh you feel, the more energy you have just on a daily basis is going to be quite important. Things regarding, let's just say again, things like eye health, we will be surprised here. Injuries, they're quite local. So you're looking at posture, syndrome within the wrists and hands. All of those things are important. So actually, funnily enough, good physical competency, general strength, posture, all of that type of stuff will all have an impact. I guess what you're never going to find is someone saying, we've done this research in this particular area. Because I just don't think there's probably a broader scope to want to do that. Just living better generally, whether you game or not, is going to be important. Our issue is getting more people to believe that is just generally important within a younger generation, I think.
Yeah. Are there parallels to be made here, Nick, with Formula One? You know, Lewis Hamilton is a fit guy. All those drivers are fit outside of the fact that they need to turn a wheel and press a few buttons and things like that. You know, fitness is a huge issue.
I'll let you or let everyone else assume that you're oversimplifying it. Just for the purposes of that.
I'm being obtuse for the purposes of getting an answer out of you.
No, it's good. Within a Formula One car at that level, the amount of G-force they're subject to, a race being an hour and a half, I think they would all be probably semi-frustrated with the assumption that they don't have to be physically fit. And to be honest, having worked close to Formula One in the past, the reality is they have to be remarkably fit, both strong and endurance component. And I think there's a myth regarding sitting in the seat. I think your point, though, Stephen, is still important for gaming, and there is just less of a physical component. And someone gaming for 4 hours is not giving them, you know, an increase in energy expenditure. And in fact, many of them might lend themselves to poorer nutritional habits because they're sitting there for 4 hours. Yeah. So, you know, they're not bored, but just the way that people work in those environments, and I've seen it before, you know, they'll just start doing things. They'll create habits and behaviors that might not be what the body fundamentally wants.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's an assumption people go to poor dietary choices. Some gamers will argue that is not them and that's an unfair stereotype. Of course, you know, I think if you took thousands of consumers, I suspect that's something that we need to bear in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Claudia, we've talked a bit about getting people sort of, you know, reaction times up high and to be alert and concentrating. What about the flip side of that, the fatigue? Runners, you know, will experience fatigue-related injuries in training and during competitions. Are there similar risks for esport athletes? I would imagine that, you know, Nick just mentioned a four-hour gaming session. I mean, being able to function for that long and at extraordinarily high levels of concentration must be immensely difficult.
Yes, of course, there is a risk of fatigue-related injuries also in esport. These athletes, as Nick has mentioned, spend lots of hours in front of computers, so they have very high mental load, so their mental condition may also deteriorate, to lead to depression, social anxiety, but also some burnout symptoms and sleep disorders, right? And these all factors may contribute to poor performance, to decrease in their mental and physical performance as well. Yeah, but also, as Nicholas have said, there's a risk of eye strain or some pain in wrist pain, hand, neck. So these injuries are related to e-players as well.
And how would a nutritionist tackle the possibility of these things happening? What would you advise?
Yeah, actually, some nutritional deficiencies may contribute to depression or mental health deterioration. So I would take care that athletes provide adequate amount of vitamin B12, zinc, iron, vitamin D3, and other nutrients that are important to maintain good mental health.
Mm. Now, it's been pretty widely reported that the computer games industry is now worth more than music and movie industries combined, and that's been followed by, surprisingly enough, an increased interest in functional beverages in the food and drinks industry. Now, is this actually fueled by demand for those products? Are people wanting to get these products, or is it just clever marketing from food industry saying these people will want these products?
I mean, if I just jump in, I think there's definitely a demand. I mean, I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? So it'll not be entirely one over the other. There was probably driven initially, there was a drive to suggest that these are great products and probably based off a small number of consumers that want them. And then over time, it just happens to be one of those booming categories, particularly energy drinks. That's captured the imagination really both in North America, the US, Canada, etc. And then of course now in the UK and Europe. So, I mean, I don't think we can be under any illusions. There's not a massive consumer demand for them. I think in the UK alone, we saw that over Christmas with them, a certain brand which actually has come under the media spotlight this week as well, in terms of Prime, a huge demand for them. For drinks, they're functional, principally both the hydration, but also caffeinated. So it's there. Honestly, it's there. Well, kind of whether we like it or not. And I say that because, of course, it keeps coming back to, is this what we should be promoting because of the typical age of the consumers that probably look to consume them?
Yeah. Tell us a bit more about that, Nick. So we are talking about younger generation. What are the kind of moral considerations here, as well as the legislative ones?
From a regulatory point of view, it's, you know, there's what you're allowed to do in a drink is there, and I suppose it's regulated to it, not to an extent, it is regulated in terms of what you're allowed to do or put on the market. All those drinks will come with a warning of how many you should or shouldn't have per day, you know, in any normal instance. And I guess that's the issue, really. An individual consuming X amount of caffeine, 100 milligrams or more, 100 milligrams, I mean, it's a strong cup of coffee, you know, do they know it's really about that? And then do they consume 2, 3 or 4? And I suppose that's the challenge, really. It's really about, do they really understand what it is they're consuming? And, you know, we can all sit here from let's assume we're all intelligent and assume that we shouldn't really have too many or in close proximity to each other, because we would have some sort of sense of understanding of that. The question is, do they really know that?
As a 14 to 15 year old, I certainly wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Or do they care, or are they told? And if you do tell them, do they still care? And if someone else within a peer group is consuming it and it seemed to be cool, then of course others will follow. And I think that's the challenge, really. Is it something that you can ban? Of course, caffeine's in our daily diet, and it's in everything. And to some extent, it's well used on a positive level for some people are dependent on it. Yeah. And so I guess it's a really challenging question, really, in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure there's one that has got an easy answer to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tricky issue, isn't it? Is there anything that's not allowed in esports? I mean, presumably it's regulated to some extent for performance enhancement. Are there, and caffeine, as you said, you know, we all use it, and yet it's performance enhancing. Is there a line to be drawn there? And is there a list of ingredients that are classified as illegally performance enhancing?
I mean, I'm going to make the assumption that something like the World Anti-Doping Association and the rules for a list of banned substances exists within the highest level of esports. Now, like we've seen in sports like boxing, they don't always apply the same rules. So I'll just say that I'll make an assumption that if they did, they would follow a natural code, which would be the World Anti-Doping Association.
You thought so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And in that instance, there's a very clear list of substances that are banned on the basis that they'll increase performance, they're bad for health, and I can't remember the third reason, but ethically they're not, you know, supportive of good clean sport, let's call it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So in that instance, I think it is in existence. Once you go down that pyramid, then of course who's subject to anti-doping regulations?
And who's there to check? Yeah.
Who's gonna start thinking about that? As it stands, I genuinely believe the biggest challenge right now is just probably the amount of caffeine that is consumed and done in a responsible manner.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now Claudia, what are some of the biggest hurdles in advancing research into nutrition and esports? You mentioned that there is very little research around. You know, is there a burning need for this? And if so, what would you like to see being researched?
I think that the biggest hurdles when it comes to research in esport or in sport in general is the complexity, because there is lots of factors and variables that influence the performance. For example, training loads, amount of sleep, recovery, nutrition, supplementation, so mood as well, also mental condition and mental toughness as well. So there's lots of factors, and even if the study finds a result, it's really hard to determine if it really comes from the food or supplement. Yeah. So I think that the complexity is the hardest part here.
And the same question really to you, Nick, this is the last question really. You know, again, World of Esports seeing rapid growth. What do you think will be the key areas of research in the future, and certainly in terms of the role of nutrition? And what would you like to see people researching?
I guess from a performance point of view, you'll see there's a lot of genuinely important performance-related questions. So, you know, to what extent is performance being increased? How can they maybe break down different elements of cognitive performance and how that might work before, during, and after, you know, playing, let's say, or competing? I think there'll be some work around the areas of sleep, or let's call it the recovery phase. And I suppose in recovery in sport, we think of recovering energy levels to some extent in the typical nocturnal times of performance, let's say, how people kind of ensure they, you know, still recover and get to sleep properly. So I think that'll be another area as well. I actually think a lot of research questions just related to the impact of gaming. So surveying the rates of injury. I think a lot of people trying to understand just general, let's say the eye condition of a lot of athletes as well. I think there's a lot of unknowns. So as much as trying to find out what could improve performance, I think we probably just don't know enough about the actual cohort of gamers at the highest level and what they display or don't display in terms of characteristics, i.e. then supporting the next level of questions, which is what will we do about it? What would I like to do? Which is a really nice question. So thank you for asking that. I think there's a lot more needs to be done in terms of just how many more people are gaming. I know we can get this off things like Twitch and Twitch Tracker. How many people are gaming, under what generations, for how long, at what time of day? There's kind of a nice bit of data around that, but I think it'd be good to solidify that and then start to probably long-term studies around the impact on health. Now, that is different to the overarching start of the podcast, which is about esports to some extent. But I think we can't separate, and I think, you know, between the impact of one on the other. So I'd like to see more of that. Hopefully to disprove the fact it's not so much of a stereotype. I think right now we stereotype it. And maybe my hypothesis is part of that stereotype. But I think we just got to be careful, or we'll all move better by having more people involved and understanding it from a kind of that broader generation and then a performance level.
Yeah. I know, I really appreciate, you know, your mention important other things like lifestyle and sort of more holistic approaches to this of you know, how healthy is somebody. That's going to be absolutely vital, isn't it? Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds. So, yeah, let's catch up again in the near future. Claudia Ann Buczek and Nicholas Morgan, thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.